This is the Accounting Influencers Podcast
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
With Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Hi everybody, it's me, Rob Brown. I'm flying solo this week because my co-host Martin Bissett is not feeling too well, so he's asked me to take over for a little while. So I'll be doing the interviews, the new section, and here's what works. And here's what's coming up in this week's show. We will be previewing the Digital Accounting Forum. This is a great event, face-to-face in the UK, and we are in awards season. Why do people go in for awards? Why do firms go in for awards? Why do associations and networks nominate themselves for these awards? So we'll talk a little bit about that. After that, we have on our special guest interview, Ian Thompson of Iris Practice Management. They're part of the Star Group, and Ian's got a great heritage in the accounting space. He's been doing it for 25 years. So we're going to talk about what the Iris acquisition means for them and what practice management is to accounting firms, why it's so hard to define, and what are the big trends in practice management across accounting profession globally. After Ian Thompson, we have Here's What Works, and we'll be looking at personal branding for accountants. Now, what is your reputation as an accounting practitioner? Or maybe you work in the fintech world. What do people say about you when you're not there? Then we are going to interview, in our expert interview, Mike Dean of WhisperClean. Mike's also been in the industry a long time, the fintech industry, and he's going to be talking to us about research and development, what accounting firms do to grow and how they help their clients grow, what funding is available, how business advisory can be done for accountants in terms of adding value to their clients in growth, in development, in recovery, in innovation, in collaboration. So, without further ado, let's get started with this week's show. And thank you to our special sponsors, Iris Software, iris.co.uk. Martin, you saw a great video just recently from Iris, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I think people don't understand about Iris is they were ahead of the game for MTD Phase 1 because they were the first software vendor to be listed as approved by the HMRC for MTD filing. And guess what? They're fully prepared for the next. So they've got an MTD webinar on demand that you can catch up with at any time. Rob, where do they go to see this?
It's iris.co.uk/MTD webinar. That's Centre for Making Tax Digital for our international listeners. And there's some great stuff there that you need to know to guide you through the whole Making Tax Digital initiative. So iris.co.uk/MTD webinar. Right, Martin?
That's right. So wherever you are in your journey, Iris know that they have the knowledge and tools to help you in the next steps. That's iris.co.uk/MTD webinar.
So it's our news section this week, and we preview the Digital Accounting Forum that's coming up in London. It does seem to be the awards season. We've got the Accounting Excellence Awards. We've got the British Accountancy Awards. I don't know what it's like in your country, but how big are awards ceremonies like this? How big a deal is it to run these? I know we're back in person now. People are putting on tuxedos and black dresses, getting all dolled up, going out, enjoying some face-to-face, having a good drink. But when it comes down to the business end, this actually is a premier event. And it consists of two parts. Remember, the Digital Accounting Forum is organized by Arena International, and that's the International Accounting Bulletin, which serves predominantly the accounting networks, associations, alliances, that professional community, and the many firms and fintech software vendors that serve them. So this is taking place in London. It's 4th of November. This is kind of a preview just to let you know what's coming up and have a little discussion about awards in general. I've just looked at some other award ceremonies, and there's ones that focus on the firms themselves. Big firm of the year, small firm of the year, practice pioneer of the year, partnership award of the year, product innovation of the year, small accountant of the year, medium accountant of the year, large accountant of the year. Now, these awards are prestigious insofar as it's nice to say that you've won them. Some people actually put nominations on their website. But I just recall a tale that I had. I was working with a big bank. I won't name the bank. This was the mid-2000s. And they had won Corporate Bank of the Year here in the UK. They'd won it for the third or fourth year running. Big black tie ceremony down in London. And I was a guest at their table because I'd helped them do some business development to train the people to bring in more customers. And I said to the head of corporate at the time, keeping winning these awards is great, but it's going to be a problem for you if you're not careful. And she said, why? And I said, well, you keep putting it on your email signatures and it's everywhere that you won Corporate Bank of the Year. And I said, people don't so much care that you won Corporate Bank of the Year. They care why you won Corporate Bank of the Year. And this is the point, isn't it? Having gone through the judging process, I'm one of the judges at the Digital Accounting Forum. It's a very rigorous process and it is arduous. You've got to submit a certain word count. You've got to submit it by a certain time. You've got to submit it in a certain way and you've got to adhere to the criteria of the judging. So not everyone wants to do this. Not everyone is bothered by awards. Not everyone sees the prestige. Either they don't think they're going to win, or they won't get anything by winning, or being nominated is not such a big deal, or they haven't got a PR or marketing department that's going to do it for them, or they might just be too busy to do it. There's lots of reasons why people don't do it. That said, there are still a lot of firms, individuals, vendors, associations, networks, organizations that go for these awards. And so you ask yourself, why do they do it? Why would it be good for your network to win Network of the Year at the Digital Accounting Forum Awards? Why would it be good to win Rising Network of the Year or Association of the Year? Why might you put in for Young Accountant of the Year? This is an individual award. Why might you be considered Personality of the Year in the accounting fintech space? So all of these considerations are great for personal branding if you're an individual, great for company branding, great for network, association, alliance branding. Why? Because there's competition out there. How are you going to stand out? Is it a better website? Is it more webinars that you run? Is it a certain area of expertise? Who are you trying to attract? If you can do anything to stand out a little bit more and get on the radars of certain people, something to start conversations, then awards like this give you two things. One, it's the kudos of being involved. And the second is the participation at the actual awarding of the event, whether you win it or not. Because now that we're back face to face, it is great to be talking. It's great to be reestablishing those connections. So lots of great awards taking place. Let's take a look also with this event. See, what I see some people doing is running an evening awards event that everyone just gets drunk for. They show up, they get drunk, they have a nice meal, they bring on a comedian or a celebrity presenter to give out the awards. And it's a roll call really, isn't it? And who gets nominated? And let's have some photographs taken. But what I like about what the IAB have done, and Arena, is to put a whole day event for what's coming up. And you can see keynote speakers, panelists, key topics being debated, and get a feel for what's current, what is going on, peeking over the garden wall, what's working for fintech vendors, what is their agenda, how are they helping accounting firms, what's going on with the latest technology, what the good firms are doing that the not so good firms are not doing, what the associations and networks and alliances are doing to support accounting firms in these challenging times. So there is a full agenda for this event. People show up during the day, keep their professional development up to date, do some great networking, hear some great seminars, get some insights, have a little break, maybe change for the tuxedo, and then go to the awards dinner in the evening. And if you're traveling, you make the most of your day. So it's not a booze up. It's not a let's stuff ourselves with food and slap ourselves on the back and clap and shake a few hands. It's professional development plus all of that. So it's a great event to get involved with. I think there are still a few places, but all of the slots taken up for sponsoring the awards. And that's another aspect of it. Getting the kudos, perhaps as a vendor, there isn't an award for you, but you can sponsor an award. And where is your marketing money going these days? What are you spending it on? Are you sponsoring events like this? Are you exhibiting at face-to-face events? Are you paying for email marketing or telemarketing or website search engine optimization? Are you bringing in more sales staff? It's a good point, isn't it? Where are you spending your money to keep ahead of the competition, keep your messages at the forefront of the accounting practitioners that you serve and their clients? So it's good marketing spend for my money. It's great to get involved with a prestigious event like this. And I know the people at Digital Accounting Forum. Personally, I've worked with them for a few years now. John Lisby, who's head of the panel of judges, he's been a very valiant servant. He's headed up a lot of associations and networks over the years. So a big shout out to him. So if you're going, it'd be great to see you there. I'll put a link to the website in if you're UK based and want to go along. And who knows, you may be involved next year. Your organization may be involved in one of the awards. But it's better to be in than out. And it's better to be involved than not participating. So think carefully about how you're going to get back on track. Where does growth and recovery come from? How are you going to get into the conversations, start to dictate the agenda? How are you staying relevant? How are you getting on the radars of the right people? It's digital, it's technology, it's accounting. The clue is in the name. It's just going to be a great event. We hope to see you there. Enjoy any other events that you're going to. Others are available. I just happen to think this is one of the best ones. Let us know about some of your events. We'd love to perhaps preview them on the show and interview you.
The Accounting Influencers Podcast.
Cutting through the crap to bring you the very best interviews, insights, and wisdom.
From the planet's most influential people in the accounting and fintech world. The Accounting Influencers Podcast.
Welcome to Martin, our special guest today is Ian Thompson of Irish Staff Practice Management. Ian, good day to you.
Hello there, Rob. How are you?
Ian, tell us a little bit about your career and what got you here and what you do now in maybe 60 seconds. Is that a big ask?
Well, considering it goes back to 1984, it probably is. So I started selling software to accountancy firms back in the 80s in the first days of sort of PCs for a company that was called Tudor Business Systems, if anybody's listening that is sufficiently old to remember that. And then I joined Star in 1996. So I just clocked up 25 years there. And then 2 years ago, Star became part of Iris Software Group.
And 25 years in this business, particularly with one company, that's quite rare, isn't it?
It is. Although, I mean, some people would say now that it's like being, you know, conditioned. You can't leave.
Like Hotel California.
Yeah, like a long-term prison sentence. You know, you're institutionalized now. You can't go anywhere else. I don't know.
Star has its own brand, but you're very much under the Iris Global brand now. So what does that mean?
Well, Iris Global, for today at least, is essentially a website where they have products that they've acquired in more recent times that have a more international reach to them. And so we sit there along with Practice Engine, Centre, FMP, Innovision, all these different products where we don't just see the UK as a potential market, but we see, frankly, the world as a potential market.
Your role is in the Iris Star Practice Management field. What exactly does that involve?
I'm really involved in two things. The first is developing new client relationships and also maintaining a portfolio of existing clients. So we look for firms who are, for the most part, medium to larger practices, who are really looking for something that does a bit more than the average in terms of a practice management solution. You know, Star is a very highly configurable browser-based application. It's a consulting-led solution. A lot of people refer to it, probably me too, as like a mini ERP system.
I guess if I asked 50 accounting practitioners exactly what practice management was, I might get 51 different answers. So in the Ian Thompson Dictionary of Life and Business, what is practice management?
Yeah, and those 51 answers might all be from partners in the same partnership, of course. It's a very good question because it's a very broad term. It's been around for a long time and it does mean different things to different people. I mean, at the core of it, I suppose you've got the traditional items of time recording and billing and sort of, you know, whip in, bills out. But it goes a lot farther beyond that in terms of analysing more about how the firm is performing, where it's performing, looking at, you know, the type of clients you're working with, the type of industries that they're in, and understanding what work is more or less profitable for you, where you should spend more of your time, where you should spend less of your time, and also spreading out into other areas that relate to it, like credit control, job budgeting, scheduling. A lot of the things for a lot of firms, they're done by disparate systems traditionally. You know, we've got a time recording system over there. We've got a nominal ledger over there. We've got a budgeting system over there and so on. And it's, you know, very hard to manage the data and pull it all together for reporting.
As a provider of practice management, how does Iris Star stack up against the competition? Because there's a lot of choice out there, isn't there?
How much choice there is actually is an interesting question.
Okay.
Because in the market, there are a lot of systems out there, particularly at the aimed at the smaller practices, which whereby volume, you've got the largest potential market to address.
Yeah.
As you get larger as a firm, the number of solutions out there tends to reduce because the market for it is smaller. What the firms are looking for is often more demanding. And it's not, you know, not a game for the faint-hearted, as one of my colleagues refers to it as. So at the top end, you've got, you know, big players who try to get into the market, you know, the Workdays and the like of this world, and the Microsofts and the NetSuites. But their software is not really specific for the accountancy profession, particularly in areas like the black art of billing. So they don't necessarily fit very well.
So the challenges that firms are facing with practice management are what, in a nutshell?
Well, a lot of their problems are homemade. Again, at the risk of sounding slightly controversial.
You know, controversial. You go ahead and have a rant.
Okay, well, this is what you signed up for then. So, I mean, for example, you know, I don't know anybody in 35 years who said that they look forward to doing their timesheet.
Right.
So just the simple metrics of getting a timesheet in. Now, whether or not you're using that as the arbiter of what you bill at the end of the day is another matter. But knowing what your staff are doing and how efficient they're being and how long it actually takes to get the work done. And people want to know, when we're 90% of budget, does that mean we've 90% of the way through the job? If we're 90% of the budget, but only halfway, then we've probably got an issue. And is that issue then with our staff? Are there issues at the client end? Is there out of scope work we should be talking to the client about? or did we just price it wrong? And what do we learn from that? And so it's these sorts of things. And likewise, on the billing side, a lot of firms are still very inefficient in the way that they bill.
When you look at how firms around the world are dealing with these challenges, what do you feel the great firms are doing that the good firms perhaps are not doing?
Years ago, probably about 15 years ago, one of our consultants was working with a client in the UK, and they got to a point where they were talking about what time unit they should charge by, and whether it should come down from a 15-minute unit, and if so, to what. That then sparked an impromptu partners meeting where 15 partners spent an hour in a room talking about whether or not the time unit should change and if to what. Somebody just needs to make a decision here, you know? And I think, you know, they need to have tighter leadership and put trust in people. And there's an awkward spot as a firm start to grow when they realize that, you know, historically, every partner's had a say in many of the decisions being made because it's a partnership. But then you get to a point where there are so many partners that becomes very difficult, but then it also becomes very difficult to effectively disenfranchise a number of them.
You talked earlier about the lack of innovation with some practice management companies, because it isn't a burning platform. It isn't like Making Tax Digital. It's not regulation driven. So how is technology changing practice management?
Probably the first one is in the COVID world is the ease of mobility about where people can work from. You've got more use of mobile apps. You've got more connectivity with other applications. You've got more security because, you know, again, if you're with working with the right technology, you can work with Azure AD and do single sign-on and multi-factor authentication and all these things to make sure that if you do have people working remotely, they're working in a secure world with you. But then also we're moving into areas where we're doing more with AI and bots and all these sorts of things. Things like integrated payment portals. So now when a client makes a payment online, not just the details of the payment, but the matching of that to the invoices all happens online. No one needs to sit back at the ranch keying in information or trying to figure out what this £1,000 payment relates to.
And presumably you can only put your foot on the accelerator of the innovation, the R&D pedal with technology and practice management to the degree to which partners and firms are ready to take this on board.
We can give out lots of ideas, but then the challenge again is the point about, well, how many of them are you actually willing to adopt? And sometimes you see friction where you've got a group of partners who really do want to move it along, and you've got another group of partners in the same firm who are quite comfortable as we are, thank you very much.
How much change have you seen in 30 years of how partners run their firms?
I think what I've really said several times through this call is effectively not enough.
There's a lot of talk about change, isn't there? But accountants are not known for it.
There's a cartoon somewhere, I think it's quite easy to find on the internet, that basically says, I want you to change everything, but keep doing it the same way as we've always done it. Just doing the same thing that you've always done in a newer, shinier box isn't really an answer. I mean, a lot of firms, and this doesn't just relate to practice management, a lot of firms will look at the software that they've got and go, oh, this doesn't work for us, so we'll throw it away and we'll get something else. It's not necessarily that the software doesn't work. It's maybe the way that you've used it, the way that you haven't invested in training, the way that you as a firm haven't embraced what it could really do for you, that can sometimes be the issues.
What alarm bells would be ringing in an accounting practice, Ian, for them to say, what we've got with practice management isn't working right now, let's give Ian Thompson and Starr a call?
Well, I think most people come to us because they feel that they've either outgrown the system that they've had for many years, or that the vendor that they're working with has lost the plot in terms of that lack of product development, and they're not really looking after them and they don't see a future in the product. Or they want to reinvent themselves as a practice and they want to do things differently, better. They want to be able to use things like AI and all these bits and bobs, and the technology that they're working with just won't let them get there.
What's a good way to contact you and Iris Starr, Ian?
Well, there's obviously the Iris Global website, and particularly if you do irisglobal.com/star, that will take you specifically to our page in the area.
Yeah.
But have a look at the general website first, by all means, before you dive necessarily into Star.
That's been fascinating. Thanks so much for your time and your insights, Ian Thompson. Iris Star Practice Management, that's been great.
Thank you very much, Rob. Take care.
So how competitive is your world? How many people are there like you? What do your rivals look like? When somebody needs what you do or needs some knowledge that you have, why should they come to you first above and beyond all of their other choices? We are talking about Here's What Works in personal branding and personal marketing reputation building for accounting practitioners and even the fintech software people that serve those accounting firms and individuals. This is the personal branding label. And Personal branding's a kind of a new thing. We know what corporate branding is. That's your website, your logos, your values, things like that, your LinkedIn company page. But we're talking about individuals here because people don't refer accounting firms, accounting practices. They don't refer associations and networks and alliances. They don't necessarily refer a product. They refer a person that sells that product. People refer people. People recommend people because it's a relationship thing. That's where the trust is built up. So it's really important to develop your personal brand, even from a selfish perspective, your career. What are you doing to accelerate your career? And accountancy is a classic, isn't it? Where you work hard for your qualifications and then to get promoted, you just bide your time. You stay chained to your desk for 10, 15 years and hope that you make partner or go beyond. But what if you could accelerate that? What if you could get to partner in 7 years and not 12? What if you could become head of a team in 5 years and not six? What if you could get there faster? Well, you can, and you do it by personally marketing yourself. Now, as a professional, you're technically brilliant, you're super smart, you probably don't feel comfortable promoting yourself. And that's fine if you've got advocates, champions, people that will shout your name from the rooftops, great introducers that will usher you into the boardrooms and make great referrals for you so that you meet all the right people. But that's reactive. It's difficult to get people like that to shout about you unless you really give them a story or some reasons to shout about you. But what can you do yourself? Well, in the area of personal branding, I'm going to give you a little model to consider. And it starts with what's on the inside. So imagine three circles. The inner circle is your character. So this is where it all starts. These are your values, your personality traits, your talents, your passions, the things you're born with, those innate gifts, your character that comes from the inside. Now you start to wrap a personal brand about that, and that's everything that oozes out of you. So your personal brand for me is the second circle or layer, and it's the outward manifestations of what's on the inside. So we're talking about here the way you look, the way you talk, the way you walk, your own LinkedIn profile, any social media profiles that you've got, the car that you drive, the way you sing, the way you laugh, the way you tell jokes. It's all the ways that your personality and your character comes out. How are you in meetings? How are you when you present? How are you in your content and your thought leadership and the things that you create and the ideas you come out with? It's all the things that come out from you. That is your personal brand. So when does that become a reputation? When people come into contact with you or the things that you produce, they're talking about you, they form an opinion. That's a perception. That is the reputation. It's what people think about you when they see you or even when they hear about you or when you're not there but you're just mentioned. So you can dictate what people say about you by giving them good things to work with. If you do nothing and you're a secret, people are suspicious of what they don't know. People buy certainty. They want some conviction in their decisions. So you've got to give them some good stuff to work with. And we call this career capital. You've got to do it on your own, by and large. But career capital, building your personal reputation, that's the outside circle. And that's what people are saying about you as a result of seeing your personal brand, seeing what you create, seeing who you are. And once they start talking, that's the payoff. So I'm going to give you four key areas just to finish with here to think about building your personal reputation so that you can do it more intentionally. And the first is your profile. So to do this, you need a network. It is really hard to get people talking about you if not many people know you. So a good reputation is knowing and being known. So I would ask you, how many people are you connected to on LinkedIn? How many people know you, know of you? The average business professional by the age of 40, and this is not a superstar, this is my anecdotal research that I've done. The average business professional by the age of 40 knows around 1,000 people on a first name basis. There are probably at least 100 at your wedding if you're married. If you're in your 20s and 30s, this is more. By the time you get a bit older, it may be dwindling because you're a little bit more selective. You're not traveling as much. You're working harder. You're busy with more stuff. You don't spend as much time developing your network. But if you know 1,000 people, my question is, are they the right people? Another question, are they senior enough? Are they influential enough? Do they themselves know enough people? So you've got to build your network. You've got to know and be known. And that means raising your profile. It means being more visible. That might mean face-to-face networking. It might mean virtual networking. But you've got to get out there. You've got to shake hands virtually. You've got to do more video calls. You've got to have more one-to-ones. You've got to start more conversations. You've got to build your network. And they say, don't they, that your network is who you... Well, I say, actually, this is one of my quotes. Your network is who you know. Your reputation is who knows you. and more importantly, what they're saying about you. So first off, you've got to build your network. You've got to intentionally build it, and there are lots of ways to do that, lots of different ways. So don't try and copy anyone else. Second, you've got to position yourself well. And this is with your content. It's your contribution. So this is your ideas, how you build authority, how you build credibility. When you do show up, what do you say? When you open your mouth, what comes out? What are you creating? And you can do this by writing, by speaking, by talking to people, by having meetings, by reading, listening, learning, commenting. You don't do it by keeping secret. You've got to position yourself. You've got to have opinions. You've got to be a little bit disruptive. You've got to be tough. You've got to ask great questions. You can't afford to be silent and reactive, because people will make their mind up about you without any say-so from you. So get your network right, that's your profile. Get your positioning right, that's your content and your authority. The next thing I'd say is get some kind of personal board of advisors, some advocates. You don't need many, but these are people that really get you, that like you, that will promote you, that will advocate you, that will champion you, that will open doors for you. They just really want to help, and they're more senior than you. So this is mentors, coaches, key introducers, might be bosses, might be peers. But people that love what you do, they love what you stand for, they really want to help you. Perhaps you've helped them as well. So get a few advocates around you, because they will accelerate your professional career. They will get you to places you won't get yourself. And the last thing I would say to you on building your reputation is be professional. So we've got profile, we've got positioning, we've got personal board. And this is all from my book, Build Your Reputation. The professional thing is you performing properly, getting your job done, hitting your metrics, creating ROI and results and outcomes for your clients, doing the basics right, getting the delivery right, establishing your credibility, being solid on tax or product knowledge or key expertise, key sector expertise, going deep with things like that. They are the kind of things that give you professional reputation. That's the very basics for getting you hired. And we'll talk on another Here's What Works about the skills that you need to upgrade to further your career. But we're talking a bit about building your personal brand. So get yourself known more, position yourself better by being more visible with your content and your ideas. Get some key people around you that will promote you verbally as much as anything else, and work on your professionalism so you are absolutely top-notch, top of the tree, rising star, really promotable and recommending you. That is the kind of thing that really works for accounting practitioners on personal branding. And we are done. Now, one of the big topics for accountants at the moment is making tax digital. It's going to hit you globally at some point. Martin, our friends at Free Agent have got something to help with here.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an accounting practice, you'll have already had the conversation at some level about how do you get your practice ready to conquer making tax digital? Well, at Free Agent, they've got a 30-minute consultation waiting for you. Each session is designed to help accountants and bookkeepers get their practices ready for the next stages of making tax digital, or MTD. And Free Agent's in-house experts will offer advice on how to segment your client base, choose the right MTD compatible software for your practice and clients, and train and educate the team and clients on the upcoming changes. After your consultation, though, you'll receive a tailored action plan with the next steps for your practice. So, Rob, for listeners who want to get that consultation and the tailored report, where do they go?
Go to freeagent.com/AIP for the Accounting Influencers podcast, freeagent.com/AIP, and they can book that consultation today.
This is the Accounting Influencers podcast with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to our special guest interview today with Mike Dean. Good day, Mike.
Hi, Rob.
Mike, we are talking about R&D, the tax market, how accountants fit into that. Very briefly, in 60 seconds, just tell us how you got to where you are today.
Blimey, early career, post-MBA, was all in the telecoms market. Nothing at all to do with what I'm doing today. But an involvement with a massive but failed global business about 20 years ago led me down the path of becoming an independent management consultant. And about 5 or 6 years ago, that exposed me to the R&D tax market for the first time through a client of mine, observed some things going on in the market, and that actually led to me joining up with a couple of co-founders who've been active in that market for years.
And let's start with this phrase, R&D. Is it just a UK phrase, or would people all over the world recognise that?
No, the UK R&D tax scheme is kind of replicated, I suppose, is the best way of describing it.
So R&D is what, for those people that don't know?
So research and development. So what we're talking about here is a government incentive that essentially revolves around tax rebates for companies who are doing research and development intensive work. There's a similar scheme to the one here in the UK in around 17 countries. And although they're all slightly different, legislation's different in those countries, of course, the fundamental sort of objectives of the scheme in all those countries is the same thing. It's all about trying to make the economy more competitive through investment in R&D and incentivising that through government incentives.
So what kind of things would come under research and development for a company?
That's a great question, because everybody's expectation when they hear the term are that you're talking about laboratories with people in white coats.
Right.
The thing that the R&D tax sector is always trying to deal with is educating people, so that's actually not really what it means. It's all about essentially encouraging innovation, and innovation can lie in lots of places outside of labs with people in white coats. So it's not sector specific, although you can imagine that there are sectors that lend themselves perhaps more towards R&D than others. You're not going to be finding much R&D in retail or things like farming, for example, whereas you're much more likely to find it in, for instance, software development, pharmaceuticals, engineering, technology, those sorts of sectors.
And for R&D and innovation, you read competitive advantage, differentiation, entries into new markets.
Yes. There are sort of several key component parts, if you like, to understanding eligibility. The first one is that the company and the projects within it need to be looking for a technological advance in their particular field. And this is always a bit challenging for people to understand what does that mean. Now, sitting alongside that is also the concept of a competent professional. So in other words, the business that's, if you like, purporting to be doing R&D needs to have people in it who are people with specific qualifications and expertise in the field that they're working in. That qualifies them as a competent professional. You've got competent professionals, you kind of first step down the line of justifying R&D. Technological advance can only be achieved by a competent professional. So that's just then about stretching the boundaries of science and technology in your particular field and working with the right people in your organisation. So there's sort of several building blocks to establish an eligibility for a claim, but they're based on those initial tenets, if you like.
So how did the government get involved in this? Shouldn't companies be investing in research and development as a matter of course?
Yes, but I guess there's several layers to this. So if you're a large global blue chip business, then you are going to be investing in these sorts of things to maintain your competitive advantage. But if you're a small SME business who perhaps is, it's not quite so obvious where to invest your cash, then by the government putting incentives in place, that's encouraging businesses to think about these things. And that in the end is going to make the economy in a much more broader sense get competitive on the global scale. So it's about getting more businesses becoming more innovative rather than just having, you know, if you like, the few at the top piling billions into it.
And when we say SME, we're just clarifying 10 for our international listeners, small, medium enterprises.
Small, medium enterprise, yes. So if we're talking in the US, we might be talking SMB. The UK government scheme has essentially two strands to it. One is the SME scheme, so it's to support those smaller businesses. The other one is the RDEC scheme, RDEC, that's Research and Development Expenditure Credit. That is for larger businesses, so businesses with over 500 employees.
And how do accountants get involved in this? Obviously, when you mention tax, that's part of their remit, but they don't always deliver this, and they might come to whisper claims or other consultancies like you to get involved.
Couple of things to mention there. Inevitably, an R&D tax claim involves either revisiting a previous corporation tax return and amending it, or it's an input into the current year submission. Now, obviously, in both of those cases, that involves an accountant. It's highly likely that an accountant is going to be making that submission of the CT600 in UK term corporation tax return to the tax authorities. So pretty much every R&D claim that's submitted will have gone through an accountant's hands. But in terms of who's put the claim together and who's supported the client to put it together, that could be a whole raft of people. So you've got big consultancies, specialist consultancies in R&D. Underneath them, there's a whole army of smaller specialist consultants, even one-man bands. Then you've got larger accountancy practices who might have specialist teams who do this kind of work. And then as you kind of come down the stack and you get to smaller firms, let's say sub 100 employees, they may have somebody in the business who's a specialist, who's perhaps had some training in this. Certainly if you get below a firm with, say, 50 employees, that is very unlikely. So at that end of the market, they're highly likely to have either outsourced to one of those bigger providers that I just mentioned, Or actually, it's often the case, they just ignore it altogether. So they end up getting involved when their client comes along and says, I've had this claim done by a third party. Can you submit the amended corporation tax return for me? Now, that's problematic. And a lot of accountants at that smaller level, if you like, are now starting to resist doing that work for their clients because they'll sit there and say, well, hang on a minute, I've had no involvement in this claim. It's actually going through on my PI insurance, effectively, if I amend the CT return, I'm not going to do it.
So who would come to a consultancy? Would it be the accountant themselves that might say, look, we've got a complex claim here, we don't have the expertise in-house to deal with it, or would it be the business owner, the business client?
Both. So when I said earlier that a lot of those smaller accountancy firms are ignoring the opportunity, what that means is they're leaving their clients to go and make their own way, which generally means that those clients will be working with a specialist consultant. Our position in the market is really to give the right tools and support to those accountancy firms to enable them to do it themselves.
Because presumably it's lucrative for accounting firms to help the clients in this way.
It is, yeah. And actually, that's a good point. Generally, the R&D tax world is dominated by consultancies who are charging contingent fees. So they're charging a percentage of the tax benefit that's realised by the process.
Okay, so the bigger that is, the more they make.
Yes, exactly. Now, of course, what that also means is that price hasn't necessarily got a relationship to the amount of effort and real value add that's gone into the process.
Got it, yeah.
So over the years, I guess the kind of end user community, the companies who are making claims or doing the R&D, have started to realise that. So there's been a lot of competitive pressure in the market over the years from a price perspective. The use of technology and the area that we're focused on means that accountants can take on this kind of work without building specialist teams, without having specialist knowledge, because the tech is going to take care of that.
We know that there's been evaporation of compliance fees for accountants, so they're looking at alternative sources of revenue. So research and development and these tax schemes would come under that umbrella of advisory services, right?
And we've got a service, or we've got an app that in its own right allows the accountant to generate revenue. So when we talk to people about the shift to advisory, we find that actually the language is getting a bit mixed up. We mean actually delivering an advisory service. Mm-hmm. Whereas most people who are talking about it are actually talking about data analysis.
And you'll have seen what's happening in the software vendor market in that they're trying to marginalize accountants, and even with strong messages to business owners like, you don't need your accountant, but you work very squarely with the accountant, don't you, rather than going direct to the client?
Yes, so we don't sell to end users at all. We don't see ourselves as consultants. So our whole business model revolves around providing service to accountants, and that's in the form of our app and the service wrap that goes around that. So we've got a raft of support that helps the accountant build confidence in them going out to deliver the service.
And presumably this makes them a lot more competitive, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So it's giving them an extra service line. So it's giving them something else to engage their clients with. The R&D tax process is quite deep in a sense. So the discussion that you're likely to have with your client once you've exposed the fact that they've got a likely R&D claim is perhaps deeper than it would be with any other service. So that means it's leading to you building a much closer relationship that ultimately you'll be able to leverage other services into there and an additional value.
Accounting firms particularly are looking for the people that will drive growth. And if they don't have the expertise in-house, they're going to need to turn to somebody like Whisper Claims to help them get on board.
Without technology, put that on one side for a second.
Yeah.
You're sitting there as an accountant running a small practice and you say, right, next week I want to deliver R&D tax. There's 500 pages of HMRC guidance on the scheme. So just sitting there and reading through it all is going to take you some time. So the challenge for all of these smaller firms who haven't already got dedicated resource on this is, you know, how do you plug that gap? How are you going to build it? And that's why they then either leave it alone and let the client do their own thing, or outsource to somebody else. And then, of course, they're out of touch with that service. More pointedly, they're out of touch with that dialogue with their client. So the use of our technology is to overcome that.
How does the system actually work, briefly, Molly?
Okay, so it's a cloud-based app. It's based on a very structured question set. So you work through the questions with your client. The answer that you give to any given question determines what question you get asked next. And as you work through it, if you've got a very simple claim that doesn't go down any of the complex avenues of the legislation, you're going to whip through it really quickly. we've broken it down into very simple questions so that you almost don't even realize that the complexity of the scheme is being dealt with in the background. Once you've worked through the question set, usually sat with the clients, it's a simple button press, and the system writes a comprehensive report for you that's ready for submission to the tax authorities. You charge a monthly subscription to give access to the platform. That allows up to 10 different users onto the platform and the one license. And then we charge a download fee for each report. So you pay for the report as you download it. And that's, I won't bore you with the detail behind it, but it's capped at £600. The website has got some really comprehensive information on there. We've got how-to guides, industry insight, several ebooks, all of which are really informative for anyone who's looking to go down this journey. So start with the website, that's whisperclaims.co.uk. Within the website, the biggest call to action that you'll see plastered all over it is book a demo. And then the last thing is, if anyone just wants to chat about what we're doing and they're interested to hear more, by all means get in touch with me directly. So that's just mike@whisperclaims.co.uk.
Well, Mike Dean at Whisper Claims, that's been great. Thanks so much for your time and your passion today.
No problem. Thanks, Rob. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to the Accounting Influencers podcast, cutting through the crap to bring you the very best interviews, insights, and wisdom
from the planet's most influential people in the accounting and fintech world
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Well, everybody, there's another show done, and what a great show it was. Let's just wrap up on what we saw this week. Remember, I'm flying solo. Martin Bissett's not with me this week. He's not feeling well, so I will pass on your regards. In our new section, the Digital Accounting Forum, we previewed that event. It's coming up in November, very soon. It's live. We are back in person. It consists of two segments. The first is during the day. It's a heavy curriculum of seminars, panels, keynote presentations from some of the big thinkers in the world, the leaders of associations, networks, alliances, and the fintech software vendors that serve them. So lots of fascinating topics. We previewed that whole thing and looked at awards generally, because in the evening, the award segment is who's winning what, who's being nominated for what, and why do firms, associations, people go in for awards like this? So we deep dived in all of that. Then we had our special guest interview with Ian Thompson. He's of Irish Star Practice Management. We talked about the practice management space and why it's not innovated as much as it should have done, what it means for accounting firms globally on the technology side, and what the great accounting firms do with practice management that the not so great firms don't do. We also looked at hybrid working models, mobile apps, AI bots, things like that, and how things have changed in the way accounting leaders run their firms with all of the change that's going on, and the battle between the progressive accounting leaders that want change and the other people in a firm that perhaps don't want to change. So loads going on in that interview with Ian. Remember, you just got the highlights today, but you can get the deep dive on Saturday with that special guest bonus slot. Then we had our Here's What Works on Personal Branding, one of my favorite topics. I did write a book about it. It is on Amazon if you want. It's called Build Your Reputation. And I did a TED Talk called The Personal Brand of You. And it's interesting, isn't it, how difficult it is to stand out, not as a firm so much, although that is a problem, but as an individual. Now, as a firm, it is hard for accounting firms to stand out. I saw some research recently that looked at the websites of accountants and how 90% of them are with the same shade of blue, with the same values, the same business proposition, the same values, same everything. And it's really difficult to stand out and stand apart. But as an individual, how do you do it? How do you make clients come to you? How do you make yourself more referable? How do you differentiate yourself, your personal brand? So I gave you some tips on how you do that, from a personal standpoint, how you professionalize yourself, develop your commercial acumen, and the kind of things you need to do to get on the radars of the right people. Otherwise, you're just waiting for somebody to promote you, you're waiting for somebody to hire you. You cannot afford to play that way after the game. And in our expert interview this week, we talked to Mike Dean of Whisper Claims. We talked about how research and development tax services are being used by accountants to add value to their clients, what kind of technology is available to help accounting clients innovate and build more growth into what they're doing. Mike's been in this game a long time, and he's got a lot to say about the advisory side of accounting and how they add extra value to their accountants to keep them loyal, keep them spending more, keep them growing. So it's been an action-packed show. We thank you for listening this week. We thank you for tuning in. If you feel so inclined, drop on the app of your choice that allows ratings or reviews and let us know what you like about the show. What you would like to see on the show, you can also leave us a message at sayhi www.fintechworld.chat/AIP. This is something that we're introducing, and we're encouraging listeners to get in touch with us. You can leave a voicemail message, let us know who you would like to see on the show, let us know the topics you would like us to deep dive into with perhaps Here's What Works or What News is Coming Up that you think should be broadcast. But it's time for you to take a breath. It's time for you to enjoy whatever else you're doing and move on with making a difference, shining a light. And as I always say to people in these challenging times, when the fires go out and the dust settles, be the one that people remember. So well done you for trying to make a difference, keeping a handle on your professional development by listening to podcasts like this and being a supporter of the show. Enjoy the rest of your day.